Being that today is Rosh Chodesh, one is not permitted to say Divrei Hesped, to eulogize individuals. Bichlal, I am certainly not worthy of even saying what I'm going to say, Divrei Haracha, snippets, evaluations of the Talmud, of one of the Gdolei Ador, who is in reality, a colossus, Shein Kamo. I was zochet to sit in the shir of Marin Harav, Rabbaron Lichtenstein Zatzal, in 1968 and 1969 in Yeshiva University. And then subsequently, at the same time concurrently, he was the Rosh Kolel. And I also used to learn the Kolel. And Rabbaron was the Rosh Kolel at that time. This is 2 or 3 years before he made Aliyah. Before he came to Eretz Yisrael and became the Rosh Yeshiva together with Harav Amital Zatzal of Yeshivat Eretz Yisrael. So I'm going to share with you snippets that I wrote down for myself from the course of a fair number of years that I had interaction with Rav Lichtenstein. Also, I was zoche to have Rav Lichtenstein in the course of the first number of years of the Yeshiva here in Yeshiva University. Rav Lichtenstein was the titular head of the Grus Kolel and Set Shiurim. And during a period of many years, I was actually off and on in attendance at those Shiurim that Rav Lichtenstein said. I don't consider myself to be worthy, to be roy, to be a Talmud of such a gong. I was speaking to the Rosh Kolel, Hagoyin Rav David Miller Shlita before, a few minutes ago, and he was zoche to really be a Talmud of Rav Lichtenstein. He heard shiur from him for decades, and he knew him over 50 years. I only had a peripheral kind of connection with Rav Lichtenstein in the gather of Ra'isa Sachirai Ufanai Lo Yiro. And so I'm going to, as I said, share a number of things. I'm going to begin by connecting my words to the Pasha of Shavua. This coming week we're reading a double Pasha of Acharei Mos Kedoshim, and in 1968, I'll try to recall with precision, I don't have, unfortunately, my notes in front of me, but I'll try to recall with some precision what I heard from Rav Lichtenstein in the Shir on a pasuk in Pasha of Acharei Mos. I'll begin with that. The Torah tells us in Perek Yud Ches, the Torah indicates to us one should not follow the mores of those that live in Egypt. Similarly, with reference to those who live in Eretz Canaan, Eretz Israel, one should not follow their mores. And then the Torah ends with a well-known series of words, one should not walk following the statutes of the non-Jewish world. So Rabbaron asked, there seems to be a tautology in the pasuk, a redundancy. The Torah began by citing Eretz Mitzrayim and Eretz Canaan. What is the additional piece at the end? Why did the Torah find the need to repeat that idea? And as a matter of fact, the pasuk immediately following, in a almost antithetical context, the Torah says, "Es mishpatei tasu veshukos haTishmu lelaches b'hem ani Hashem," that one should observe the chukim and one should follow the mishpatim. Rashi on the spot comments, "Mishpatei tasu," says Rashi, "mishpatim" refer to what we call rational statutes, namely items that, even had they not been formulated, it would have been proper to observe them and to follow them. While chukim, says Rashi, are dvarim sheim zera samelach, sheyetzah hara meshiv aleihem. These are things that the yetzah hara immediately attacks us. Why should we observe them? Such as Rashi indicates, achilas chazir. Why should chazir not be permitted to be eaten? Ulevisha shatnes v'taras mechatas. You know, schukim are items that appear to us to be arbitrary. We don't understand the purpose of them. In contradistinction, the mishpatim that clearly have a rational underpinning. Similarly, said Rabban Lichtenstein Zatzal, we could explain the previous pasuk in the following way. There's a dialectic that's embedded in this pasuk. The Torah tells us, on the one hand, do not adopt the mores of Mitzrayim and Canaan. And Rashi explains on the spot here as well, why did the Torah accentuate Mitzrayim and Canaan? Shemaseim shel Mitzrayim v'shel Canaan mikulkolim mikol ha'umos. That their behavior is absolutely beyond the pale, repulsive, over and above all the other nations of the world. We're talking about behavior that the Torah actually begins to delineate a bit later, when the Torah, as you know, in these two parshas, the Torah has a listing of arayos, of the forbidden relationships, and those are the two areas, or two of the areas where Mitzrayim and Canaan, where they really, unfortunately and tragically, deteriorated. But above that, said Rav Lichtenstein, the Torah then ends the pasuk by saying, "Ubechukoseim lo seleichu." Here we're no longer talking about actions that are inherently abominable, that are inherently repulsive, but rather something that appears to be what we would call stam, that inherently has no negative aspect to it. Why did the Torah forbade such items as well? So Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal answered, the Torah did not want us to in any way simulate or emulate the goyim, the non-Jews. Even if there's nothing inherently wrong with what they are doing, the Torah wanted us to essentially have our own identity, our own unique, distinctive identity. And he was medayik in the Lashon of the Pasuk, if I recall correctly. It doesn't say, yes, chukoseim lo sasu, but chukoseim lo selechu. The question is not, the issue is not embedded in the action itself, but rather that a person wants to simulate or emulate the non-Jewish world. Of course, if we're talking about something of a positive nature, there's no question that one should go ahead and do actions that are of a positive nature. But if talking about a ma'ise, what you would call stami, that has no to'eles, or nothing negative in and of itself, except the nations of the world follow such a practice, the Torah tells us, "Uvuchukoseim lo seleichu." And he referred to a Rambam that I xeroxed a moment ago. The Rambam says in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Perek Yud Aleph, "Ein holchem b'chukos ha'akum v'lo medamnim lahem." One should not follow the ways of the non-Jewish world, nor should one be likened to them. Lo b'malbush, not the way one dresses. Lo b'seir, not in one's hairstyle. V'chayotzimem shenemar. Lo sechol b'chukos ha'goyim. V'nemar b'chukoseim lo seleichu. V'nemar hishom alecha pentinoke shachareyem. Hakol b'inyan echad humazir. The Rambam says this is all one element. Shelo yidam elohem. Elo yiyya Yisrael muvdol mehem b'yadua b'lamabushav v'rishar masav. A Jew should be distinct. A Jew should be set apart by his apparel, by his actions. K'moshu muvdol mehem b'madov v'deyosa. Just like our Weltschauung, our entire perspective on life, on the world, markedly differs from that of the non-Jewish world. And the Rambam goes on. If I'm not mistaken, Rav Lichtenstein also referred to the Kesef Mishnah on the spot, who cites the Ma'arik. Lo niskavim rabbeinu l'esor ela malbush hamiyuchah lehem. Upirshu ha-yisraelim mimenu mishum tznius om neidaber acher. Shekevi sh'nesiach lehem b'nei giyusan Upirsha Yisrael mihem mitne Yahadusan, Okshelovshim Ha Yisrael Nira Kimodalahem Benibshakhareim. The Ma'arik says that what did the Rambam interdict? What did he say is not permissible? Malbisham Yuchalahem. Which means that clearly non-Jews wear suits. We're also permitted to wear suits. And that's what the Ma'arik indicates very clearly. Shainu Malbisham Yuchalahem Alderach Zo, Ena Yisrael Chayab Vishtanus Nagoy Klal Vikar. We're allowed to wear suits. We're allowed to wear glasses. We're allowed to wear shoes. B'chulu b'chulu. In other words, there's no absolute interdiction, prohibition, to do any action that the non-Jew does. The isur is only lehidanos lagoyim, to simulate, to be like them, to behave, you seeing them as models for ourselves. It's interesting that Rav Chaim also referred to something that the Rav, his father-in-law Zatzal, spoke about quite often. The Ramban here on the spot, the Ramban claims that this isur is relevant even to Avodas Hashem, because in the parsha in Re'eh, there the Torah says, "Hishama lecha pentinokish shachareim acharei yishamda miponecha ufentidrosh leloheim leimor eicho yavdu agoyim ha'eles eloheim ve'asekein gamoni." The Torah warns us, Parshas Re'eh, that the way Rashi explains, based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the pasuk comes to interdict Avodah Zarah b'derech avodosa. But the Ramban here on the spot over there in Re'eh, Ramban explains the pasuk is not talking about Avodah Zarah. It's talking about Avodas Hashem, because it says right after it, Lo sase kein l'Hashem elokecha. Someone who wants to worship Hashem the way the non-Jews worship the Avodah Zarah. The Torah says, do not do so. I began with this because I believe Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal was someone who probably in the most distinctive and probably most unique fashion was someone who was very al-Quran with what Chazal say, Chochma Bagoyim Tam. Anyone who's read a spate of articles, actually I read every one of them, that Rav Lichtenstein wrote in English and in Hebrew regarding secular studies, and there's no question that he was someone who was incredibly and I would say profoundly educated, and someone who had incredibly vast knowledge in philosophy and literature. In 1968-1969, when I was a Talmud in the Shir would extend for approximately 2 hours, 2.5 hours. That was the average Shir. And then, on Sunday, Rav Lichtenstein would say, after the Shir, Divrei Hashkafa. So the first year, Rav Lichtenstein essentially presented to us a history of all the literature, both philosophic and other, on the concept of dogma. Dogma, as it appears throughout philosophy, throughout literature, both ancient literature, medieval literature. And the truth of the matter is, I didn't even know what the word dogma meant. And neither did most of the Shir. The Shir was a very large Shir, approximately 120 students, Talmidim in the Shir. And there were actually many in the Shir who were not even formally registered there. But they were in the Shir, because they felt that was the ideal Shir to be in. I actually was formally registered. And so he spoke about dogma every Sunday. After 3 Sundays, a gentleman in the Shir raises his hand, and asks Rav Lichtenstein, could the Rebbe please tell us, what in tarnation's name is he talking about? What is dogma? And so Rav Lichtenstein, in his unique fashion, what was the nature of that question? He didn't understand the question. The fellow was simply asking for a definition of what is dogma. And then he proceeded for another hour and a half to explain the word dogma, which was even, I would say, in some respects, more esoteric than the lecture itself on dogma. That was my introduction to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. However, eschatoi ani maskir ayom, on any number of occasions, Rav Lichtenstein, those who knew him and remember him, he would come to Shir with, I would say, an enormous number of svarim, an enormous number of tomes that he carried, T-O-M-E-S, that he carried in one hand, sometimes even carried a briefcase in the other hand, and there was no problem for him whatsoever. He was someone who was quite limber, and I would say, in great athletic shape. How do I know that? a number of times during the break, after the shir, Rav Lichtenstein would be walking outside carrying all of his farm, and then he would notice people on the basketball court, and then he would say, he would look at his watch and say, perhaps there were a few minutes to go ahead and, shall we say, limber up on the basketball court. He had a wicked hook shot. Tremendous hook shot. However, what was incredible, and this I saw many times, I was lucky to play basketball with him. I actually wasn't of his caliber, but a number of times people would foul him in the most, shall we say, disrespectful kind of way, as people often do on a basketball court. And his response was, "Oh, excuse me, I apologize." He would apologize to them for, shall we say, their fouling him, and he would literally be effusive in his apologies. That somehow he was the one who was responsible for, shall we say, whatever happened on the basketball court. He played in the cleanest way imaginable. Once or twice, I remember the court, someone used an expletive that was not exactly, shall we say, so Rav Lichtenstein responded, "I don't recall that term in the Oxford Dictionary." The fellow, he asked, "Could you perhaps define the term with precision?" The fellow was at a loss to define the term, as you can imagine. Of course, he apologized profusely. He said it was simply, shall we say, reacting a bit on the emotional way, the emotional side. Anyway, I want to just, the setting that I'm trying to present is that Rav Lichtenstein was a normal Gadol Batorah, a very normal Gadol Batorah. I asked him on one occasion, during those years, that 2-year period, I was a young man, very young. I asked him, I understood he went to Harvard. He mentioned a number of times, he mentioned a number of his professors that he encountered in Harvard. So I asked him, when did he have time to learn when he went to Harvard? And did he learn Bichlal? So he looked at me and said, yes, it is true that he was occupied with his secular studies. And he was only able to learn, and I recall this distinctly, between 12 and 14 hours a day when he was in Harvard. So I looked at him, shall we say, rather sheepishly, and indicated that I also learned 12 to 14 hours a day in the course of 1 week, or perhaps even two. And Rav Lichtenstein then told me he thinks that even when one is in a university setting, the minimal kriyas hitam la'teila is in the area of 12 hours. I was rather astounded by that comment. In the course of the last 20 years, I asked Rav Lichtenstein many, many questions. One of the questions I asked him when I first came to Eretz Yisrael was about going up to Har HaBayis. And Rav Lichtenstein told me that for him the issue was not an issue. His shver, Haras Soloveitchik, was opposed to it. There's no way he can possibly even consider such an option. About 7 years later, I was in the Gush, and because the issue of Aliyah to Har HaBayis is a very, shall we say, popular issue, including in the yeshiva of Har Etzion. So I asked him again. So at first he told me, "You already asked me this question 7 years ago." That's what he told me. I was a little bit, I think in 7 years he wouldn't remember that I asked him the question. He remembered 7 years. He was very precise. And beyond that he said to me, "Then I told you that I can't do what my shver doesn't do." I also asked him why he doesn't wear tchelis. He also told me because his shver was opposed to it. But the second time he told me that this is a complicated halachic issue and there are many technical details involved, and he asked me if I'm interested in listening to them. To be quite honest, I wasn't that interested. But anyway, I didn't have a choice. An hour and a half later, Lichtenstein went through basically all the sugyas that relate to the issue. I was in his office in the Gush, and that was that. Then, about 7 years ago, I asked him again. He says, jokingly, with a smile on his face, "You have a chazaka b'shur avuot." This is the third time you've asked me this question. I was so embarrassed. This time he told me the following answer, which to me was the most unbelievable answer, and really, I think, is the very essence of what Hagoyin Avraham Lichtenstein Zatzal is all about. He told me, I'm not at the Madrega, even if technically it's permissible to be Ola Tarabayis, because the Pasuk says, Umigdashi Tiro. I'm not holding by Umigdashi Tiro. I was just flipping out. What I wanted to ask him, but I didn't. If he's not holding by it, how are all the others holding by it? But I didn't ask him. I had too much derech eretz. That's a pasuk in Chumash that appears twice. Eshapsosai tishmo midoshu tiro ani Hashem. As a matter of fact, while I was at it, since he mentioned that, I asked him why the pasuk appears twice in Chumash, the identical pasuk, in two parshias. And right away, Yedarko, he began to explicate the matter for me, two different psukim, the two different contexts, and why the Torah repeats it on two occasions. I told him my father, Vashon, was very bothered by that question, and therefore I presented it to him. I want to talk about the following comment that I heard many, many years ago, even before I was a Talmud of Avaron, which means I was a teenager. I went to hear a lecture of Lichtenstein Zatzal, and he was speaking about the Fairy Queen. Now, I'll be honest with you. At that time, I thought the Fairy Queen was somehow associated with the Queen of England. Some form of fashion. I didn't know that she was of a fairy nature. No one's even laughing here. So, he indicated that if one reads the works of Milton, one will plummet the depths of Milton, one will find there unbelievable rapture and excitement, romance, and even connection with divine elements. That's what I heard from Avraham Lichtenstein when I was a teenager. I didn't really understand what he's talking about. I didn't know what the Fairy Queen was. I never heard of Milton. I had a friend actually named Milton. Not a friend, he was a leader. He was a Talmud Rav Soloveitchik, Milton Pine. He was a big Talmud Chacham. He actually is in one of the pictures of the Habib Rav Soloveitchik. Many, many years ago, he appears in that picture. And so other than that, I didn't know any of the Milton. And so I actually, in my naivete, went over to Rav Lichtenstein. I asked him if the Fairy Queen has any connection to Great Britain, to the Queen of England. So Rav Lichtenstein did not even chuckle. At least one would expect some sort of a chuckle. He said, no, it's a piece of literature written by Milton. I then asked him where Milton is. So he said to me, I will show you in the library where to find it. And he actually did. He took me to the library. And I decided to read The Fairy Queen at a pretty young age. And then to read Milton and a few other things. And then after I read, I went back to him and I said, I read it. I wasn't exactly, shall we say, enraptured. I didn't feel any connection to the divine. He said, you have to read much more. That's what he told me. And then, but I was disturbed by that, because I felt that one could find it also in Sefer Tehillim. I was 17 or 18 years old at the time, and so I went to Avraham Soloveitchik and told him over what I heard from Rav Lichtenstein. So Avraham Soloveitchik asked me, what exactly did you hear? So I told him more or less what I heard. He said, let's go and discuss it with him, and we proceeded to go to Rav Lichtenstein. They actually were speaking in Yiddish with each other, and then Rav Lichtenstein, who actually, by the way, the moment Avraham Soloveitchik appeared, he jumped up. That's what I saw. Out of derech eretz, out of respect for Avraham Soloveitchik, who is his uncle, sort. And his wife's uncle. And then they were speaking in Yiddish, and at one point Avraham Soloveitchik said, he tells Rav Lichtenstein, "Das ist amerikanische Bocher. Mistame fashtedik in Yiddish. There's an American Bocher, he probably doesn't understand Yiddish. We should speak in English." But then he tells Rav Lichtenstein, but if you don't mind, don't use your king's English, because he may not understand that either. I'll never forget that comment. Anyway, they proceeded to discuss the matter, and that was one of my earlier encounters between Avraham Soloveitchik and Avraham Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadikim Livracha. During the days that Avraham Soloveitchik was in the yeshiva, which is in the 60s, and I was there because I used to go when I was in high school to his Hashkafa Shir once a week, I saw how Rav Lichtenstein was Mishamish Avraham Soloveitchik. Literally Mishamish him. How he literally took care of him, ministered to him, was busy running all over the place just to serve Abuchinstein, just to serve Aaron Soloveitchik, Dola Shimusha Shaltara Yesim Limuda. And you can imagine the kind of Shimush that he showed to Aaron Soloveitchik, Kalbachim, Ramon Shosh Kalbachim, what we saw regarding his Shver, regarding Aaron Soloveitchik. When Aaron Soloveitchik would say public Shurim, which was during the Chumad Russia, and also Yartzeit Shurim, because Abuchinstein would be present. Sometimes the Rav would come from Boston, and Rav Lichtenstein would wait for him outside, and the moment he saw the Rav coming, he would start galloping at full speed, which he, Baruch Hashem, was quite capable of doing, and he would quickly run to take the Rav's coat, to carry whatever the Rav was carrying, to be Mishamishin. By the way, I wasn't zochet to see a lot of this, but towards the end of his parents' life, Rav Lichtenstein, the Kibbutz of the Aim that I saw myself was absolutely mind-boggling. I don't think I ever saw any Kibbutz of the Aim like that in my entire life, the way he dealt with his parents. In general, his covenant for other human beings was nothing short of being remarkable. He saw in everyone a tzel malokim that was worthy of covenant, and that's what he showed. When I was 18 years old, one of my chaverim got married, which is quite striking. His name was Atzvi Flaum, who unfortunately just recently lost his Rebbetzin, Zecheinu Lebracha. And so we all went to the wedding. It was actually the first wedding of anyone in our class. 18 years old. He's Mekayim the Mishnah. Meshman Esri Lechupa. Shutuk HaMashmo. So I remember both Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Herschel Schechter were at the wedding. And there were many Gedolei Yisrael at the wedding. Rav Moshe Feinstein was Mitzad Kedushin at this Chassidah. There were also many Chassidish Admorim, because his wife, Aleha Shalom, came from a very well-known Chassidish family. She was a Bas Yochid. And I recall that Rav Lichtenstein came with his white straw hat. It was the summertime, the end of June, a rather warm day, and dressed in, shall we say, not what you would call a classical, formal, black yeshiva kind of outfit, but rather in summer kind of clothing. And he sat at a table together with Rav Shechter, the brother of Chaim Arukin, and there were other Gedolei Yisrael sitting there. And I decided, of course, kedarki, to eavesdrop, to see exactly what was the discussion. This happened many, many years ago. This is several decades ago. And there was a kasha that was asked by one of the Gedolei Yisrael who was sitting at the table. No one could answer the question. And thereupon, the two who answered the question were both Aaron Lichtenstein and Rav Herschel Schechter, which was quite amazing to me. And one of the Gedolei who was there asked, "Wer ist das?" He said, "Who is that fellow in dem Hittel, in that yellow, white kind of straw hat?" They asked, because they were amazed that someone in the yellow, white straw hat could answer such a difficult kasha. And they indicated whom he was, a son-in-law of Aaron Soloveitchik, Zatzal, and people were quite amazed by his, shall we say, prowess, Talmudic prowess. When we were invited to his home on Hanukkah, which we were every year, I'll never forget that as well. Aaron, once he invited you, so we had obviously what to eat, Baruch Hashem, no shortage of that, in Washington Heights. And then we also sang over there, and Aaron said Divrei Torah for several hours. And then at one point in time, I thought we were going to remain there the whole night. At one point, the Rebbetzin, Tibad Lachaim Arukin, appeared on the scene, and the following ensued. "You sweep the floor. You wash the dishes. You take care of this, take care of that." I think Aaron was ready to go under the table. Meirov and Bisonuso. But trust me, it was very good that the Rebbetzin was around. She was directing traffic. Although she should continue to direct traffic at Meir Yassim Shonim, Rav Soloveitchik's daughter. There was one point where there was a Rashid in YU whose name was Avarnest. People don't really know who he was. He was a gentleman who lived in Washington Heights. That's Rav Reichman. He was a goy nadir. And at one point in the Kollel, they were learning in Yanni's Roy. And so Rav Lichtenstein invited Rav Arnes to say a shir, in Yiddish of course, and in Yanni's Roy. He told me I should pick him up. He lived in Washington Heights. He had no telephone. He had no refrigerator. That's what I saw when I came to his home. Basically, he had a washboard, I actually did some examination of his apartment while I was at it. I was astounded. Rabbi Chassin told me he's one of the Doli Ador. And therefore we have to be Malabahim. Anyway, when he came to say the Shir, Rabbi Chassin and the entire Kailo waited downstairs to be Malabah Rav Arnis upstairs. And Rabbi Chassin himself was Malabahim, carried his coat, carried all of his Svarim that he was carrying with him, because he was clearly understood what it means to be Mishamish Tamil Chachamim and in Mishamish Doli Ador. Rabbi Chassin wrote an article a fair number of years ago. I'm not into this genre of literature, I'll be honest with you. In Jewish Action Magazine, I don't subscribe to it, but once in a while I see it. I'm here in the yeshiva. People show me these items, and there he described three of his rabbeim. A classic piece, which is worthwhile reading. I'm sure Rabbi Elshon Shliter remembers that piece. He describes the Rav as a colossus. How shall I translate that? Beyond description, the greatness of Rav Soloveitchik. Then he describes his second Rebbe, the one that he had earlier, namely Harav Hutni Zatzal, the Pachad Yitzchak, Chaim Berlin, the Roshiva of Chaim Berlin. Gavrad Mistafina Mine. He was frightened of him. I once asked Rabbi Chassin about that. And he told me, I asked him, why was he so frightened of Rav Hutna? So he told me, Mora Rabbah Kivar Shamayim. The fear one has to have for one's Rebbe is like the fear one has to have of heaven. And he said Rav Hutna was, he told me that he was not just a Gavra Rabba, not just a unbelievable Gadol BaTorah, but he said that the Yirah Shamayim was coming out of every pore of his body. I think that was the language Rav Chassin used about Rav Hutna. The third Gadol that he describes in the article, he said he thought he could have tangency with him. And that was Avraham Soloveitchik, Zatzal. But the closer he got to him, the more he realized it was impossible to even come near him. I believe that Avraham Lichtenstein was the confluence of all these three gedolim. On one hand, he was a colossus. Shoyleit b'chol ha-Torah kula. On the other hand, even though I think that today such a concept is almost non-existent, those of us who sat in the shir, he was gavra d'mistafina mineh. We were frightened of him. We were in awe of him, because it was clear, and at that time he was a young man, in his 40s. Gavrid Mistafina Mine. He knew Kol HaTorah Kula, and he also was a Renaissance man, someone who had incredible knowledge in philosophy and literature all over the place. And the third item, or the third Godel, that he was very much like, was Avraham Soloveitchik. And I'll tell you what I mean. His Diktuk B'mitzvahs, I was not even able to see it, because I didn't really hang out with Avraham Lichtenstein, unfortunately for me. But I saw a number of times Diktuk B'mitzvahs that to me was unbelievable. Many years ago, I was in Boston, and Avraham Soloveitchik appeared there in the 70s, when he first started the yeshiva in Chicago in Brisk. And it was a convention of Rabbonim, RCA rabbis, and Rav Soloveitchik introduced his brother. He was trying to raise money for Brisk in Chicago. With whom? With Rabbanim from the RCA. So the Rav said the following. He said he signs his name on the Slicha Klach, the following. Yosef Dov, Ben Maron, Hagoyin, HaChassid, Moshe Halevi Soloveitchik, Zitzuka La La La. So the Rav said, Maron is Nishdo. Maron is not here. Vel Given Maron, she was in Yiddish. Vel Given Maron, my father. My father was Maron, he's not here. Goin, das ist mein Bruder. Goin is my brother. So I thought he was referring to Avraham Soloveitchik. He said, no, my brother, the professor of chemistry. The Rav had a brother who was a professor of chemistry. Who are you? Vel Given Goin. Chosid, das ist Rabban. Rabban Soloveitchik is the Chosid. And then the Rav said, Alts was der Tut, is of Nimishur HaSadin. Everything he does is of Nimishur HaSadin, which is beyond the measure of the law, beyond the law. That's Avraham Soloveitchik. Those who knew Avraham Soloveitchik know that is a hagdara meduyeket, incredibly precise scientific definition of Avraham Soloveitchik. Avraham Lichtenstein was also a chassid. Everything he did was lifnei meshuras hadin. he told us the following story. In 1968, Chaval, I don't remember all the pratim. I still have notes about the Chatin Shurim. However, this story I only wrote down very briefly. I went looking for it. I couldn't do it today, but a number of years ago I went looking for the story. I only have it, a brief synopsis of the story. But this tells you who Avraham Lichtenstein is. When he was in day school, Avraham went to day school in Brooklyn, New York. I think the name of the yeshiva, if I'm not mistaken, was Zichron Melech. Is that possible? In Crown Heights. He grew up in Crown Heights, Avraham. He told the following story, Avraham. They're in class. I don't recall what grade it was. Grade 4, perhaps grade 4, grade 5, one of those younger grades. The Rebbe left for a moment, and one of the young chaps, that's how Avraham called in, was out of control, broke a large plate glass window in the class. And you can imagine, a large plate glass window, we're talking about a lot of money. The Rebbe comes back and sees the window that's broken, and the Rebbe asked the following question. Vehotzu brachen de fenster. Who broke the window? Of course, not a word. Silence. No one's going to say anything. No one's going to rat on anybody else. So Avraham said, Yichob getracht azeh. I began to think, am I mechuyev al pidin to reveal who the culprit is? So he said, according to this Rishon, I don't recall the Rishonim now that he utilized, according to this Rishon or that Rishon, it could be that I'm not mechuyev to. But according to the Chafetz Chaim, Shmir Saloshin, that's what he quoted, he quoted a certain seif that apparently he was familiar with in grade 4 or 5, could be I am mechuyev to. So he was wrestling what to do, and so he was machuyah, he's machuyah to reveal the information. So he said, Ehot Asketon, he did it. Pointed to the fellow. And then Avraham said, after class, I was pummeled unceremoniously by my classmates. That I have down. I was pummeled unceremoniously by my classmates. For years I couldn't understand it. Apparently they held like that Tysis. That's an example of the tmimus of Avraham Lichtenstein. Tomim tiyem Hashem Elokecha. I don't think I ever saw anyone so yashar in my entire life. Yashus at hasif. A number of times I asked him questions since I came to Eretz Yisrael about kablanim and all kinds of what they call here foil shtick. How shall I translate that, Rabbi Solomon? Foil shtick, Rav Alon. How shall I translate that? Behavior that borders on lack of yashrus. And so Rav Lichtenstein, every time I asked him, he looked at me as if I'd gone off the deep end, and he said, I don't understand. You have to do that which is yashar, that which is glat, that which is honest, that which is straight. And that's what he was. And once, and one of the times I asked him, he said, you've already asked me this kind of question more than once. And right away he says, let's learn the Ramban together. He takes out the Ramban in Chumash, which happens to be in this week's Parsha. V'yasisa ayoshev atov. But Rav Lichtenstein was referring to, the Ramban is found in two places. By the way, as Rav Elshin Shlita mentioned a few moments ago, I was going to point this out, in 1968, a similar question was asked to Rav Lichtenstein. If he were to be on a desert island, what sefer would he, shall we say, take with him? And he answered, the Ramban al Hatorah. That's found already in a sefer that was published not long ago. But Rav Lichtenstein then proceeds to read the Ramban with me in Kedoshim Tiyum, in this week's Pasha. A famous Ramban, where the Ramban basically comments on the Rashi. Rashi says, Kedoshim Tiyu, Prushim Tiyu, and Arayos. You should be separated when it comes to Arayos, because that's your juxtaposition to the previous Parsha. But the Ramban has a different Mahalach. Ramban basically comments over here, and the Ramban writes that Kaddish Atzmecha B'mutalach, that even in areas which are permissible, one should sanctify oneself. And the Ramban, his theory runs along the following lines. The Torah restricts man's physical pleasures in many ways. Certain types of food are asur. sexual activity is prohibited at certain times, but there's room for all types of excesses. Which means that even though the Isurim are numerous, the areas of permissibility are also numerous and inviting. And a person can indulge in pleasurable excesses that are permissible. Ramban says to the maskana that he'll come to be, Rahman al-Islam, what he calls a Nabal Bishus HaTayra. Someone who is really acting in a despicable way, but with the Torah's license. So for all these excesses or indulgences, he has not violated any specific law or transgressed any specific prohibition. So the Torah, because of that, lays down a principle, Kedoshim to you. We should be holy. Don't indulge in excesses. Even those things that are technically permitted, one should not engage in. Kedoshim to you. That's what the Torah says. That's the Ramban, that Ramban Lechasi read it with me. He read me the Ramban in Kedoshim and the Ramban in Dvarim. Perish Vav over there. Vasisa Yashavato. I once heard from a Rebbe of mine, Rav Tzvidov Kanatovsky, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. He once commented on this Ramban. If the Ramban is right, why did the Torah formulate the prohibition in such a way, Kedoshim to you? Why did the Torah formulate it in a way where a person would not become a novel of Shus HaTorah? And so he referred to a Magid Mishnah, a Hilchos Shchenim. Where the Magid Mishnah comments in the Perek Yudal Hilchos Shchenim, talking about the din of Bar Mitzvah, is halacha that if two people have fields that are adjoining each other, so the neighbor of the adjoining field has first dibs to purchase that field. Based on what pasuk the Gemara quotes, Vasisa Yashavato. The same concept. So the Magid Mishnah writes over here, Be'inyan din ben Ametzar, Husha Terasenu, Hatmima, Nosna Bachakak Mido Sa'odam Bahanagasu Ba'olam Klolin Ba'amiras Kedoshin Tiyu Bachakabona Kimoshamu Chazal Kadesh Hatzmucha B'mutolav Shelo Yehi Shotuf Achar Atavos Bikach Omra Torah V'yosisa Yashuv Atov Bachakabona She'yisnai Ba'anhova Tova V'yishorem B'nei Adam V'lo Hayom Min Aroi B'chol Zeh with Tzavos Potin, but if Shemitza Satera Heim, Bechol Eisu, Bechol Zman, Bechol Inyan, Ubechwe Achayav Lassus Kein, Umida Sa'odah Mahanagosa, Mishadem Esofi Azman, Vio Ishin, Bechul, Bechul. He says something very striking, very significant, the Magid Mishnah. He points out that since there are different kufels, there are different zeitgeists, and different time periods, so things change. So, there was no way the Torah could actually have gone into detail, into minutia, for every single generation, for every single door. It would not be possible. So what did the Torah do? The Torah wants to present to us a general kind of directive. It means we should know what the spirit of the law is. And thereby, hopefully, we will, shall we say, even in terms of the letter of the law, follow what we have to do. So my Rebbe Rav Kanatovsky, he was medayik in the Ramban. Ramban actually, if you look in the complete text of the Ramban, he points out that's how the methodology of the Torah. That's how the Torah formulates its injunctions in general. And the Ramban gives two other examples. When it comes to Shabbos, first the Torah says, this type of malacha is also that type of malacha. And then the Torah says, in general, l'man yanuach, you should rest. As you know, the Torah only mentions two malachas on Shabbos that are also, havara, l'sivar v'shvichom v'shoseichem. The Torah is very, the way the Mishnah writes the Chagiga, Mikra Mu'at Ba'alachas Merubos, and then the Torah is a general statement. Similarly, regarding Vinod Mechaveru, the Torah sets down all kinds of specific prohibitions against Gezel, Eidu Sheker, Ramban says, and then the Torah has a general statement, Yosisa Yashavato. My Rebbe suggested, Rav Kanatovsky, that there are three areas here that the Torah is concerned with. First, man's physical interest, sexual relationship, that's one area. A second area is relationship vis-a-vis God, reflected in Shabbos. And the third area is Beidon Mechavero, the whole area of Choshe Mishpa. The Ramban's point is that all the prohibitions can be circumvented. So why did the Torah not extend the number of prohibitions to include all these excesses? The answer is impossible. You can always find a legitimate loophole in any prohibition. However, the way to prevent that, if the Torah gives a clear, definite direction, That's what the Torah is doing. That's the Ramban Yisod. Of the Sisa Yashamato, following upon the heels of all these minutia, all these details. You can tamper with the letter of the law, but you can't tamper with the spirit of the law. That apparently is the intention of the Ramban. And I told this to Avraham Lichtenstein. He was very misspelled for what Rav Keretavsky said. And then he told me the following. He told me that the same idea could be expressed even in halachic terminology. Usually, a mitzvah say is associated with some, what we call, ritual article. Whether it's tzitzis, whether it's tefillin, whether it's an esrog, matzah, shofar, chafotim shel mitzvah, chet shel mitzvah. Something which is a law, a negative commandment, is essentially a chavas gabra, and not expressed through a concrete article, through the medium of something concrete. So, all of these three that I mentioned from Rav Keretavsky said Rav Lichtenstein, what do we find over here? We find that there's no chet shel mitzvah. The general positive commandment in each case sets up a concrete article of mitzvah that becomes the vehicle. But what is the vehicle over here? What is the article? What is the chet shel mitzvah? The gabra himself. That's what Rav Lichtenstein told me. He said that's what Rav Keretavsky meant. The gabra becomes the chet shel mitzvah regarding this issue of Yasisa Yashavato, whether it's in the sexual arena of Kedoshim Tiyu, whether it's in the other two arenas as well, and he felt that it corresponds to the three Kadal Averis that a president shouldn't violate, Gila Raish, Rechazdana, Avedazara, whatever the case is. Here, I believe that when I mention Ovat Chosid Min Oretz, Abaham Lichtenstein was a Chosid. Everything he did was Lifnei Meshur HaSadik. His Dikdik B'mitzvahs was unbelievable. I heard from a Rebbe in the Gush, I won't mention his name. He told me he never heard a word of Lashon Hara from Avraham Lichtenstein. And he knows Avraham Lichtenstein over 50 years. He said one time, he decided on Purim, he has to get Avraham Lichtenstein to say Lashon Hara. He must do it. That was a mission that he was engaged in. So, they first got Avraham Lichtenstein to drink. They weren't sure whether he was. He told them, no, I'm not inebriated. Whatever his shita was regarding Purim. And then they started talking, obviously things that perhaps should not have been spoken about. And then they got Rav Lichtenstein to respond to some of the things they said. And right away they said, oh, that's Lashon Hara. So Rav Lichtenstein said, Chas v'shol. If you look at the Shmiras HaLoshon, the Chafetz Chaim, chapter and verse, Hikobin, that's not Lashon Hara. They were despondent and frustrated. I never heard Rav Lichtenstein speak against anybody else. Never. And I know him for a fair number of years. I didn't converse with him daily, but often I spoke with him. And I also mentioned personalities to him and things of that sort. Never did Rav Lichtenstein speak against anybody else. The last 20 years of my life, I've been to many chasanas. And at these chasanas, both Rav Amital Zatzal and Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal were present. And three times, the following scenario occurred. I used to sit near them. I was interested in eavesdropping on their conversation. The chassan comes, walks down the aisle. Everyone stands up, including Rav Lichtenstein, Rav Amital. The kallah comes down the aisle. Everyone stands up, except for Rav Lichtenstein. So Rav Amital says to him, Rabar, was ist das? In Yiddish. What is this? So Rav Lichtenstein said to him, I'm talking to you. There's no chiyuv to stand up at the kallah. So Rav Amital says, Al tifush min hatzibur. Right away, Rav Aaron jumped up. So I asked Rav Lichtenstein, why did he jump up for? He holds there's no chiyuv. What's he jumping? He says, two reasons. One, the Rosh Yeshiva gezot. Rosh Yeshiva told me to stand up. And two, Al tifush min hatzibur. This happened three times. The third time I asked Rav Lichtenstein, why do we keep repeating these events? So he said to me, Rav Lichtenstein, in a smiling fashion, you mean you want to get back at me for the chazaka of Shir HaMuad? What I told him, I was flabbergasted. V'alokim also esadam yashar, v'hem abikshu chishvenes rabin. A man was created yashar, glatt, straight. That was Rav Lichtenstein. His anova was also unbelievable. Unbelievably modest. I once told him over a whole shtickle Torah, which I thought was pretty good. about 10 years ago. So clearly it was not good. But Rav Lichtenstein obviously did not want to make me feel bad. So he told me that I hear what you say, but I suggest you look at the following sources. And he started quoting them, but they were so quick, I have to write it down. And he quoted me 22 sources against what I said. He didn't say they were against what I said, but I looked them all up, and I realized that the Shtickl Torah had no foundation whatsoever. Rav Aaron used to come to Toronto to test Talmidim. There was one time Rabbi Silverman, he came to test Talmidim. And it was mind-boggling. The test would take several hours. Several hours. He would have a group of Talmidim sitting in a room, and I was there, and he would actually go through whatever Masechta they were learning. You know, high school students from these schools generally don't really, shall we say, cover an entire Masechta in the course of a year. Rav Aaron would test them on all of Kedushin, all of Baba Kama, all of Baba Basra. I saw a number of times where he went through a number of different Masechtas, and it was quite serious. The atmosphere was a very serious kind of atmosphere, and he took the job very, very seriously. He asked all kinds of pointed questions. At one time he was in Ovil, and Rav Aaron asked me if he could daven mincha for the Amid. I said, yes, he can. However, there is a time limitation. This you can appreciate here. Because they have to play basketball during after lunch, and there's an X amount of time for basketball, and that clearly is the critical element here. So he told me, no, you shouldn't be concerned. I will certainly be sensitive to their sensibilities. And then he asked me, the minute in the yeshiva was to daven the Hechad Kedusha. So Rav Aaron said, I would like to say the entire Chazaras HaShatz. I say that's not the minhag, I tell him. He said, well, you know, there are different minhagim, and there's a test of Abasa, what minhag is, and a Mordechai, and this, and that, it's all business. I don't know who he was referring to exactly. I found out later what he was referring to. And he said he prefers to daven with Chazaras HaShatz. I said, fine, but it has to be within a time limitation because they have to play basketball. That's critical. Otherwise, my life will be b'sakana. So, he didn't fully understand that, but he then proceeded to daven. Hishmanesi b'lachash took him approximately, I would say about 12, 13 minutes. The Chazaras HaShatz, where each word was enunciated and said with clarity. The whole process was 25 minutes. Almost as long as Shachris is over here in Yeshiva. So what happened was we were left almost without a minyan. But luckily I had to hold on to just a number of gentlemen that to make sure we have a minyan for Rav Lichtenstein to say Kaddish. And then Rav Lichtenstein afterwards said, I tried my best. I think I was sensitive to their sensibilities. I didn't respond. This happened a number of times in the course of a number of years, and Rav Lichtenstein every year is to come to test the Talmidim in Toronto. There's a very beautiful piece that Rav Lichtenstein wrote about Hashlomo Zalman Auerbach, Zatzal. It's kedai to read in his the two-volume work. I'm not going to discuss it. I once asked Rav Lichtenstein what he saw in Hashlomo Zalman after the Rav was not well, and Rav Lichtenstein was in Eretz Yisrael. He became enamored of Hashlomo Zalman Auerbach. I was once present. Once I was zocher. I was here in Eretz Yisrael in the late 70s. I was speaking to Hashlomo Zalman Auerbach. I went to speak to him, and Rav Lichtenstein came. And the moment he arrived, Hashlomo Zalman got up, melo amdo, in the presence of Rav Lichtenstein. I saw it myself, and he saw in Hashlomo Zalman an unbelievable fusion of just beautiful character traits, and obviously godless patora that was also unbelievable, and balance, and shall we say, really a beautiful kind of personality, Molei Chen, Molei Chesed. And that's really what Rav Lichtenstein was all about. On Yom Ha'atzmaut, Rav Lichtenstein gave the shiur in Ivrit. Now, I'll be very honest. The whole year he said the shiur in English. Many of us had difficulty understanding his English. When he said the shiur in Hebrew, Kal v'chomer v'menusha kal v'chomer. So one gentleman in the shiur asked him, why does he feel the need to speak in Hebrew on Yom Ha'atzmaut? So Rav Aaron started crying and said, he's very troubled by the fact that he's not zochet to live in Eretz Yisrael, and at least at Yom Ha'atzmaut, he could have that connection to Eretz Yisrael, literally in tears. I was zoche on the 25th anniversary of one of my rabbeim, Rav Tzvi Dov Kanatovsky, Zatzal, that I mentioned earlier, to be invited by Phil Chernovsky. Those of you who may be familiar with that gentleman, Torah Tidbits, he invited me to speak. And so I didn't know that I was not the only speaker. Thought I was speaking. He asked me to say over Divrei Torah from Rav Kanatovsky. I come there, place is literally jam-packed, and there are three speakers. One was a contemporary of Rav Kanatovsky, was a Rav in his 70s, it was already a fair number of years ago, and the second speaker is Rav Aaron Lichtenstein Zatzal. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein describes himself as a parishioner in the 1950s of Rav Kanatovsky, Young Israel, Eastern Parkway, and he proceeds to point out that he loved the drushes of Rav Kanatovsky. He looked forward to them every Shabbos morning. And he was the only one of a spate of rabbis, most of the rabbis said Rav Aaron, with darshan from the New York Times. I remember he said that. That was the order of the day. Rav Kanatovsky would always say, only say, Divrei Torah. When my Rebbe Rav Nissim Albert Zatzal was nifter, so I asked Rav Lichtenstein what he thought of Rav Nissim Albert. He told me, he was a chefetz of a shtickle Torah. There was nothing you could talk to him about where he didn't have a shtickle Torah to say. On Siddur, on Gemara, on Rambam, on Shulchan Aruch, and the politics of the day. Rav Nissim Albert would take us across the street, and we would eat a greasy spoon. Rav Olshin Shlita, you probably remember. Even Rabbi Reichman is from Washington Heights. We would eat a greasy spoon, and Rav Nissim Albert would analyze the papers, the New York Times, the New York Post, the Daily News, loved us. That's what we would say. Rabbi Olshin earlier mentioned in the 2 years I was in the Shir, there was a country in Africa called Biafra that was given their independence. And Rabbi Lichtenstein felt after the Shir, we should march on behalf of Biafra. So, I followed my Rebbe. We went to mid-Manhattan. Sorry? The next day, I was confronted by two eminent Rosh Yeshiva in YU, Rabbi Yochum Guelek and Rabbi Nach Bonzin Zatzal, Zecher Tzadik in the Dracha. I happen to know them well from the Bronx. They asked me, was it geschehen yachtin? Where'd you go yesterday? What happened? So I said, we went to march with Rav Lichtenstein on behalf of Biafra. He needed to go and take me to discuss the issue with Rav Lichtenstein. Rav Lichtenstein, the moment he saw them, Oman Meloy Omdo got up, poshut the Derech Eretz that he showed for them, and he was given a Musa Shmuz right in front of me for about a half hour in Yiddish. Pretty strong Musa Shmuz, especially by one of the two Rashi Yeshiva. And he didn't say a word. I asked Rav Lichtenstein, I don't understand. You explained to us about Tzelem Elokim, that's how he articulated the reason why we should go and march. People who are having massive difficulties gaining their freedom in Africa, we have to be sensitive to other human sensitivities and the like. Why did you say anything to these two Rashi Yeshiva? And he answered me, in front of two G'dolim, Talmidim Mufhokim Babriskarov, I'm going to talk. I'm going to speak. I remember the Levaya of Rebbetzin Chalap, Sochenu Lebrocha, Azul Chalap's Rebbetzin, Bodo Chaim Arukin. I saw Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Kushelevsky, Bodo Chaim Arukin, were engaged in conversation, and there was a mountain that had to be literally climbed in order to get to the Kever. And so I said to myself, I can't go up that mountain. It's too much of it. Yalla Bahar Hashem. And those two, Rashi Yeshiva, clambered up the mountain together, holding on to each other. I was very despoiled from that. Again, from the youthful athletic qualities of Marina Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, as I said earlier, was a Renaissance man, Shein Kamo. He was Sholei B'chol Mechmani HaTorah And Sholeit, in, as I said, secular knowledge, his secular knowledge was absolutely, probably unparalleled. And yet, he was grounded in Yiras Shamayim, unbelievable tznius, unbelievable adnova, unbelievable yashus. Those are the qualities that we saw when I was a very young man. And there's no question, they had a major influence on my life in many, many respects. I asked him once, why you made Aliyah? When his shver was not so into it. So he took offense at that comment, that his shver was not into it. He said, from where did you get that sense, that impression? I cited to him many different things, including when my Rebbe after the Topsy Zatzal made Aliyah, in the early 70s, almost at the same time as Avraham Lichtenstein, I spoke at his, in the cafeteria, in the Reuben cafeteria, when my Rebbe was about to make Aliyah, on a Rambam Hilchas Talmud Torah, just as Talmidim are obligated to be Mechabit a Rav is obligated to love his Talmidim, Ulekarvam, and Rav Lichtenstein also spoke. But the Rav was not there. And I understood the Rav was not happy about one of his Talmidim, Rav Kanatovsky, who was a Talmud Muvlog of Rav Soloveitchik. Matter of fact, Rav Kanatovsky told me the Rav used to wake him up in the 40s at 3 o'clock in the morning. He had a Chiddush in Rambam. He needed someone to talk to about. He would wake up Rav Kanatovsky from the dormitory and walk around that river, the East River, Hudson River. Which one of the two? Anyway, for several hours discussing the Rambam with him. So he was a beloved Talmud, Rav Soloveitchik, but the Rav didn't feel that it was the proper thing for him to go there to sell. He was a Rosh Hashiva, very highly touted, a Rav in a very prominent shul. Anyway, this I told the Lichtenstein. I said to him, how come he made Aliyah? So the Lichtenstein told me, I fell in love with the Ramban. And the Ramban al HaTorah, anyone who's familiar with the Ramban al HaTorah knows the Ramban's unbelievable connection, metaphysical connection with Eretz Yisrael, soul connection, S-O-U-L, heart, literally, a heartfelt connection with Eretz Yisrael, even to the point where there are statements, and that's why the Rabban understood the Gemara Ksubas, Kol Ador Eretz Yisrael, Kideinu Eloka, the Hashgacha of the Shem Yisbarach is Dafka in Eretz Yisrael, and Rav Lichtenstein always used to speak about it. In the 2 years, 68, 69, that I was up to be in the Shir, constantly spoke about Eretz Yisrael, and almost always with tears in his eyes. How he's not yet Zocher to come to Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, well known, I heard this from Lichtenstein, I checked it out with him to make sure that it was a true story, that he once said Hallel, forgot about the protein. Yes, the issue of tefillin. Putting on tefillin again in Eretz Yisrael. Put on tefillin in Chutz Aretz, come to Eretz Yisrael, put on tefillin again because it's an under tefillin. It's a chepter tefillin of Eretz Yisrael, not a chepter tefillin of Chutz Aretz. Lichtenstein was, to me, a Malach Hashem Tzokos. He was literally a veritable angel, an unbelievable Malach. I think he was a Chad Bedora, one on the globus. I don't think there's any possible model that can compare to Moreno Harav, Hagoyin, Rabban Lichtenstein Zatzal. Halavai, we should take some of those qualities that I described here, and halavai, we should see him as a model for our behavior, and halavai, we should be zocher that with these qualities, especially with his beautiful midos, he was just an exemplary person in terms of ben adam b'chaveiro, ben adam b'makom, those exemplary midos, halavai, we should be zocher to bring about the gula shleima b'meheirah b'yameinu.